Hi, and welcome to the AA Grapevine. I'm your volunteer reader, Shelley Miller. Today I'll be reading from the March 2025 issue of the AA Grapevine. This is part two for the month. The articles we'll be covering in this section are starting with step number three, tradition number three, and we've got some stories on the home group. So let's get started. And our first story is about step three. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And it's entitled, My Best Friend. Once alone and full of self-pity, she made a decision to let step three introduce her to a partner for life. When I came into AA, my will was pretty much dead. I didn't want to quit drinking and definitely didn't want to be an alcoholic. But that was where I fit, on the bottom rungs. On the outside, I was snarling, arrogant, and sarcastic, but it was all bluster. I had little idea of will and even less of character. I barely had the will to live. When I was 90 days sober, I banged my head against the wall at my AA meeting in New York City. I was so disappointed. Nothing had changed. Why had God done this to me? Later, my sponsor took me to coffee at a place on West 72nd Street, and on the excuse of getting a cigarette, I went outside and walked into traffic. I said, God, if you want me to live, I will, but I don't know why. As I stood in the middle of the street, somewhere inside, I became aware that I really didn't want to die. That was probably my first true third step, I thought. I went back inside, not jumping for joy, but changed. In my first 3 years of sobriety, I shook a lot. In my first 6 years of sobriety, I was depressed. Then one weekend, I fell into a black hole, and I felt like I couldn't get out. I went from phone booth to phone booth, calling AA friends until someone was home. I got help, and I sat with my AA friends. Over time, I realized that I'd been living a life based on a belief that I was going to be a movie star. Nothing mattered. Nothing was good enough. Luckily, God and AA got me through it, and I started living my real life. Build with me and do with me as thou wilt, our third prayer says. The bondage of self for me was a lot about self-pity. As I saw it, I was a victim of my parents, of society, of boyfriends. God and AA showed me that self-pity was nothing to be ashamed of. I had to face it and turn it over. When I was a kid, I spent lots of time alone. I trusted no one, and very few people liked me. My parents told me that I was special, but the other kids were not impressed by special me. I became defensive and fearful. My parents thought the teachers were not smart enough to teach me, and so I was an arrogant little snot in classes or the teacher's pet. I was very unpopular and decided that my parents were wrong. I wasn't special, so I became especially bad. By the time I was a teenager and started drinking, the rebellious alcoholic in me was in full swing. I never really progressed past there. I was needy, angry, never self-supporting, and I expected someone to clean up my messes. The bondage of self was choking the life out of me, and yet our third step prayer gave me such hope. The prayer talked about freedom and victory, and although I could see no reason why I deserved these things, I could understand that God would want me to be a witness of God's good work. Looking back, I knew that I could not accomplish freedom with my unaided will. I needed God, and God became my best friend. First of all, I realized God was not a person, so I was able to trust Him, her, it, or whatever. I went through stages where God was the wind or an eagle or even a cow. Now the God of my understanding is a force for good in the world that's stronger than any other force. I pray and meditate every morning. In AA, I have studied Zen Buddhism and been to seminars with the Dalai Lama. For a while, I was a meditation workshop leader. In the 12 and 12, our co-founder Bill writes about continuous, persistent, affirmative action on the third step and the rest of the steps as being the way to realize serenity, courage, and wisdom. In my life today, I'm on the lookout for decisions based on self that place me in the position to be hurt. These words from the big book about God sum up the third step for me. We had a new employer. He provided what we needed. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we can contribute to life. As we discovered that we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence, we began to lose our fear. We were reborn. Every day we can be reborn, and that's my salvation. I no longer want to die. I'm glad to be alive in the world and in the program with my fellows. What a miracle. Signed, LG from Brooklyn, New York. And our next story is about the third tradition, which reads, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. And it's entitled, An Evolving Desire. He wasn't ready to stop drinking at first, but as he hung around and listened, things changed. I did not have a desire to stop drinking when I first arrived at AA. I had fully accepted the fact that I would die drunk one day, but I was not ready to do so, at least not yet. Maybe after all my children had graduated from high school, then it might be all right to die drunk. After all, I was sure I was not an alcoholic. I was just a problem drinker. If anyone had said, you have to be an alcoholic to be here in AA, I would have walked out the door and never come back. In my case, that might have been a death sentence. Fortunately, the people at AA meetings did not tell me to leave. Instead, they just kept quoting these slogans at me. Keep coming back, one day at a time. If you don't drink, you won't get drunk. I hated those slogans. What I really wanted was to be shown how to get drunk every day without having any problems. Somehow I knew that was not going to happen in AA. The people in AA knew that I kept coming back. I would change over time. After a few months, my desire to not die drunk yet had morphed into a desire to not die drunk at all. I knew the only way for me to accomplish this was to never drink again. I was still sure that I was not an alcoholic, but my desire to not drink was changing. Being a slow learner, it took me 4 or 5 months to begin to recognize that the lives of the other members were better than mine. When I saw them outside of AA meetings, they were having fun with their families and appeared to feel cheerful with their neighbors. They were enjoying their lives, and I was not. The difference seemed to be that they were sober. I was dry. Again, my desire to stop drinking evolved into a desire to have some fun in my everyday life outside of AA. When I was 6 or 7 months sober, the group elders kept insisting that I go to the newcomer meetings. I didn't understand why, but I thought maybe those new people needed to hear what I had to say, so I went. At a Monday night newcomers meeting, a man named Merrill talked about his thinker didn't work right. He said he could run his business without any problem. He could balance his checkbook just fine, and in most areas of his life he was sane and rational. But when it came to alcohol, his thinker was broken. He simply could not stay away from the first drink. Sitting in that beginner's meeting, I fully surrendered to the first step. My desire to stop drinking also changed into a desire to live sober. Over the next several years, my desire to stop drinking has grown into a desire to stay stopped drinking. I cannot experience the gifts of sobriety if I'm drunk. At about 4 years of sobriety, I got married, and my desire to stay stopped drinking was so that my wife would not leave me. I have learned the most about recovery from the people who I've sponsored. I cannot be a good example of sobriety if I have a rotating sobriety date. My desire to stay stopped allows me to be of service to God through working with others. I've also learned the joy of service activities in AA, and I've held several service positions at the group and district level. I still have a desire to stay stopped drinking because I enjoy being of service. Besides, those AA people won't let me participate in service activities if I'm drunk. As I have grown and evolved in recovery, my desire to stop drinking has also grown and evolved. I often think about a sentence in the chapter How It Works in our big book. It says, the point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. Today, after more than 50 years of continuous sobriety, my desire to stop drinking is focused on continuing to grow along spiritual lines. Bill's intent for writing the third tradition was to keep the doors of AA open to anyone and everyone with a drinking problem. The action behind the real genius of our third tradition is that it's not stagnant. It changes, grows, and evolves as we transform spiritually. Signed, Jimmy C. in Peculiar, Missouri. And we have one more story about Tradition 3, and it's entitled The Only Requirement. A few years ago, I direct contrast to our third. That's not to say that I heard a man share something in a meeting that in my 31 plus years of sobriety, I had never heard before and have not heard since. This man identified himself as an alcoholic with 35 years of sobriety. He went on to say that in early recovery, he really struggled to get sober. I didn't find that to be unusual, as many recovering alcoholics struggle early in their journey. But what he said next astounded me. He said that if you had not struggled, if you had not suffered to achieve sobriety, that you do not belong here. You do not belong in AA. There were about 125 other men in this meeting, many with long-term sobriety. I looked around the room to make eye contact with someone to gauge what others might have thought of this. I felt what this man was saying was in tradition. Personally, I didn't struggle to achieve sobriety. I was a heavy drinker, but in the beginning I agreed to stop drinking and attend AA meetings for 90 days, only to prove to a counselor that I was not an alcoholic. I never experienced the symptoms of physical withdrawal. I never went through any alcohol rehabilitation program. I just simply stopped drinking and have not had any alcohol in over 31 years. That's not to say that I completely surrendered myself to this program on day one. I did not accept the fact that I indeed was an alcoholic until about day 365. But if I'd been sitting in an AA meeting between days 1 and 364, not having struggled with sobriety, unsure about whether I was an alcoholic, and heard an AA veteran with 35 years of sobriety saying I didn't belong there, what might have become of me? Would I have gotten up and left, convinced that I did not meet the criteria? That might have been the most tragic error I had ever made in my life, due to someone's misinformation. Luckily, I looked around the room that morning and did not notice any newcomers getting up to leave. Hopefully, no one took his message to heart. Signed, Gary F. in Williamstown, New Jersey. And our next story is from the home group section, entitled Mystery Man. Whoever showed him kindness on the stairs that day helped give this alcoholic another 38 years of life. My snow-covered boots were making puddles on the tiled floor in the back of the church. I had made it about halfway across to my destination, a lit stairway at the far end of the foyer. It was the only light on in the church other than the one that marked the exterior double entry doors. This is where I now remained standing still. It wasn't the cold and wind of a February night in upstate New York that held me frozen. It was the frightening sound of laughter. I was so fuzzy on why I was even there, but I knew I definitely wasn't there for laughs. I was 30 steps away from what appeared to be my destination, but I could not move forward. I was rigid. I couldn't leave, but neither could I continue with those stares and the merriment I heard. The happy sounds began to die down and were replaced with singular voices that I could not make out. The light ahead and the murmur floating up the stairs were my only sensory perceptions. I have no idea how long I stood there. All of a sudden, I heard the entry door open behind me and someone walked in. Strangely, I did not turn to look. It had been years since I had not checked for possible danger from behind. A man in a long coat passed me on the right. I watched him grab the handrail as he headed down the stairs. A few steps in, he stopped, turned around, and headed back my way. I looked right at him as he approached me. The man grabbed my arm and said, "The meeting is down here." I was surprised when he first entered the church, and I hadn't turned to look. I was stunned again when I allowed him to grab my arm. I was now in shock as he helped me down the steps. I felt like I was losing control as he led me to a plastic chair at one of the many round tables. That's the full and complete memory of my first AA meeting. I cannot recall anything else. But I came back. In the months that followed, I always attended that Tuesday night meeting. I came to know all the regulars. However, this being an AA meeting, it probably would be more accurate to call ourselves irregulars. I talked to everyone week after week, asking if they knew who had walked me into that meeting. The meeting averaged about 50 people, and I averaged the same number of no answers to my question. After a year, I even spoke when it was time for announcements from the floor. I told the room that I was searching for the long-coated gentleman. The response was blank looks and puzzlement. No one knew any more than I knew. No one remembered my first meeting or my guide. After 2 years in the program, I concluded there was a conspiracy. Somebody, and probably more than one person, knew exactly who I was looking for, and they had decided just not to tell me. As the years passed in the program, my quest to find my benefactor's name subsided. 38 years later, his identity is still unknown. In my memory, that kind stranger from the night has no face or form, merely kindness and a long coat. I've accepted him as my ultimate anonymous alcoholic. I do not know his identity, and yet perhaps I really do. My hope is that perhaps you do too. Signed, Urban D. in Birmingham, Alabama. And our next story is entitled, Making It Happen. A member shares how he and his AA friends got an LGBTQ+ meeting started in their small Pennsylvania town. When I was 17, I couldn't wait to escape the rural community where I was raised. I grew up in a loving family and was afforded many opportunities, yet I was always searching for something newer, something bigger. I was also increasingly aware of my attraction to other men and felt that moving to the city for college would afford me the opportunity to explore this part of myself. In Philadelphia, I found exactly what the younger me was looking for. The excitement of the club scene, the freedom to indulge any passion, and the fuels, both legal and otherwise, to heighten these new experiences. Alcohol, other substances, and casual sexual encounters became a regular part of my life, as they did for many others in the late 70s and early 80s. I partied like a madman, oblivious to the consequences for my long-term physical and mental well-being. And by the age of 30, I was broken, alone, and truly powerless over alcohol. Returning to my hometown, I experienced a few more years of desperation before I found my way to my first AA meeting in January of 1992. Right away, I committed to attending 90 meetings in 90 days, enlisted the help of an incredible sponsor, connected with a group of newcomers with whom I forged great bonds. We took road trips to other AA meetings, spent hours sipping coffee at local diners, and celebrated every milestone of early sobriety. My sponsor encouraged me to take on commitments, to step into positions of leadership, and more importantly, to welcome every newcomer who came through the door. As a result, I've been blessed over the years to serve as a general chair, GSR, and intergroup rep, all while never allowing myself to get away from making a pot of coffee, stacking chairs, or cleaning ashtrays. I was having a fulfilling life in the program, yet I longed for connection with fellow AA members in the LGBTQ+ community. I would make an occasional trip to Philadelphia meetings, a 45-minute drive each way, but the lengthy excursions did not allow time for much pre- and post-meeting socialization. And my hometown region, while far more progressive than in my days of youth, was a desert when it came to AA for LGBTQ+ members. Then one evening at dinner, my friend Bill B., in a casual conversation, convinced me that the ultimate act of service to AA might very well be starting the meeting we could not find anywhere else. But just how do you start such a new group? I wondered. The answer soon revealed itself. With heart, with friends, and with love for both the sober and LGBTQ+ communities. In the early summer of 2022, I began an email chain among a group of friends to discuss some preliminaries. We were fortunate that a member of our organizing collective was affiliated with a welcoming church that was willing to provide a home for our AA meeting. A group of 12 of us enthusiastically divided up chores, designing and distributing flyers, developing a format, obtaining supplies. We called our new meeting Sober and Out, set a date, and brainstormed on how to build awareness for it. Our team consisted of old-timers and newcomers, representing many colors of the rainbow. We even had two allies who recognized the value of what we were trying to do and wanted to support our efforts. We also enlisted the help of friends from a distant LGBTQ+ meeting. Thank you, Warrington and Westchester, Pennsylvania, and Wilmington, Delaware. We went about our tasks with a sense of excitement, each text with an update or new development. I took flyers to this meeting, or someone donated 3 big books, brought smiles to our faces. One of the happiest moments of our early efforts was when we got a letter from GSO Member Services in New York informing us of our recognition as an officially listed AA group. Sober and Out was now officially a part of the lineage dating back to Bill W. and Dr. Bob's first encounter. With enthusiasm and honestly some nerves, we unlocked the door of the church on the first Wednesday of September 2022, unsure of what to expect. While we thought we had done a good job spreading word about the meeting and had gotten ourselves listed on the local intergroup website and apps, we had no idea who or how many would show up. Would our launch be noticed? Would the community respond? Imagine our shock when 20 minutes before our start time, we had already outgrown the room. Hoping for 10 to 15, we had 30 people crammed into our small room. We scrambled and moved everyone to a larger section of the church, brewed another pot of coffee, and thanked our respective higher powers for such a tremendous, heartwarming response. Even more importantly, on that first night, we heard members express gratitude for our creating a safe space to share personal battles they sometimes were not comfortable discussing in other AA meetings. Many of us nodded in agreement and shed a tear while hearing of the struggles of our fellow members. Now a few years old, Sober and Out has continued to grow. We regularly see attendance of more than 40 at our weekly meeting. We've had to move a third time. We now call the church basement our home. We pay rent and make contributions to AA on a 50-30-10-10 scale. We greet newcomers and hand out phone numbers and anniversary coins. We even have a tiara that our anniversary celebrants can wear. But most importantly, we've created a home for all members of the LGBTQ+ community and our AA friends to help keep each other sober. Great joy has come from seeing younger members step into positions of leadership. Having served as our group's first general chair, it then became my duty to step aside after the initial term and allow others to lead so our group can become what it is meant to be, rather than what I or any single individual want it to be. Thank you, Step 7. They are doing a fantastic job at exactly that. I am so proud of our home group. If you're ever in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania, on a Wednesday night, I hope you will visit Sober and Out. I promise someone will greet you warmly at the door, and we will likely provide a treat to go with your coffee. Our members love their snacks. But most importantly, all of us promise to share our experience, strength, and hope in a safe, affirming, and supportive setting. No matter who you are, how you define yourself, or where you find yourself on your journey. And if you cannot make it to Phoenixville, we hope you will consider organizing something similar in your hometown. We are glad to help in any way we can. We started a meeting, and so can you. Signed, Carl M. in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. And we're going to wrap it up with one more story from the home group section entitled Opening Up. Amen Bob was a member of our home group called the Brown Bag Bunch in Palm Bay, Florida. Bob used to say the same thing in every AA meeting. I get drunk and we stay sober. I thought he was nuts. I wanted to know why he could drink and I couldn't. At that time, I had no idea what he meant. During my first few months of sobriety and shortly after getting a sponsor, I planned a weekend trip to Miami. Keeping my promise to find an AA meeting while there was easy, but walking into that meeting was not. Anxiety struck me as I was sitting in my car in the parking lot, thinking of my list of what ifs. What if they don't like me? What if they can tell I'm a newcomer? What if they think I'm not an alcoholic? My alcoholism was working hard. It suggested that I go in, sit in the back of the room, quickly leave as the meeting is over. I didn't need to share or participate, and I could tell my sponsor I honored my commitment to go to a meeting while I was in Miami. Sounded like a plan. Well, I'm learning that God's plan also works in mysterious ways. In this particular AA meeting, a microphone is handed from person to person, and everyone is expected to say something, even if it's just, I pass. As I waited for the inevitable microphone to get to me, something magical happened. The person immediately before my turn revealed something that I deeply identified with. Without realizing it, my head was nodding in agreement. I was saying to myself, "Yeah, me too." Suddenly, I began to feel like I was right where I belonged. When it came my chance to share, I don't remember a thing I said, but it was honest and from the heart. I stayed for coffee after the meeting, talking and hugging people I had never met before. It felt like a home away from home. I really believe I was touched by the grace of God in that meeting that day. I couldn't wait to tell my sponsor that I finally understood what Amen Bob meant. Signed, Marty Z in Palm Bay, Florida. And that's all the time we have for today's AA Grapevine. Thank you for listening. My name is Shelley Miller, and I've been your volunteer reader. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.